I had a big Grey Cup party last year that ended in disaster, so that was sweet.
Here, what happened?
Green is the color, football is the game.
Welcome to the Green is the Color podcast. This is episode 321. I'm your host, Francis Lord. This week I'm joined by Mr. K, Gerard Suretsky, and our special guest this week, Tyler Carwandy, the writer prophet. How is everyone doing?
Great, thank you.
Doing okay, thanks.
Fantastic.
All righty. Well, on this week's show, we're going to talk about the games, the divisional finals in the CFL. We will talk about, I think, reaction in Calgary to this game. We'll also talk some All-Star balloting, our picks for Players of the Year, and the Grey Cup, of course, that's looming. So Calgary and Saskatchewan, this was the big game, the one that we were all interested in. If you've missed it somehow, the Riders upset the Stamps 20-16. It was pretty frigid on Sunday at McMahon Stadium in Calgary. It was about minus 26 Celsius when you include the wind chill. Against all odds, and Saskatchewan was not the favored team to win here, they were able to come out with a win, and they move on to Edmonton to take on the Montreal Alouettes once again in a repeat of last year's Grey Cup, where hopefully they can redeem themselves for that last play loss last year that everybody keeps talking about, and it's already being talked about to death, and it's the first day of Grey Cup week. But let's talk about the game itself. We'll begin, I guess, where we usually do, and that's with the quarterbacks. Just read out some stats to you. On a really cold day, the ball was frozen solid for the most part, hard as a rock. Durant was 20 of 36 for 180 yards. That's a 56% completion ratio. Two TDs, a pick. Burris was 19 of 28 for 229 yards. That's 69% completion ratio. One TD and one pick. So quarterbacks. Oh, another thing we could mention was Durant ran for 51 yards. Burris, strangely, 1 yard. So, thoughts on the quarterbacking play?
Well, I thought they were Durant again. The typical slow start like the last week at BC, but he got it together and he started moving the ball. And there's more of a run game yesterday. So, there's some holes opened up, and there were some timely runs and timely passes.
I thought Durant looked pretty shaky and indecisive, and then he did that one big run where he took his first hit of the game, and he seemed to be fine after that. I think that's kind of been his pattern. Every time he gets that first big run and hit, he seems to check in, and it's good to go from there. So I don't know why, but that's the way it's been going.
It does seem like he needs to be, in order to be playing at his best, he needs to get out and run, and then he feels more comfortable, or he gets into some kind of a rhythm, or, you know, he gets the defense he catches them by surprise when he runs, right? So he can both run and pass in that situation. They're not just expecting the one. So a pretty good play. I mean, only 180 yards, but he did the job, and he did what he needed to do. And you consider that his two his number one targets, Fantuz and Dressler, who both went over 1,000 yards this year, didn't do much. Fantuz didn't get a catch. He had to turn to Getzlaff and Koch for yardage, so he got them the ball, and I guess that's what mattered in the end here. Is anybody surprised by the fact that Burris didn't run it 1 yard?
Yeah, I am, actually. Usually he takes off and he causes you fits, and he keeps drives going, and for some strange reason didn't do it. I don't know.
It was almost like he was playing hurt, though, you know, like he didn't want to run. Or do you chalk that up to the pressure Saskatchewan was applying, that really there wasn't anything there?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I thought he could have taken off a few times, but I know Jarrell Freeman and Mike McCullough were over the field, and Bullock.
And how do you assess the defensive line's play here? Like, is this some of the best pressure we've seen all year?
Yeah, I mean, Calgary's got a good line, and I mean, Burris, did he lead the league in touchdown passes? I don't know that, but no, they put some great pressure on him, and Burris looked, I thought Burris looked, the one, he looked shaky, actually, and a lot of times.
Well, I don't know. For me, he just looked like he was injured and tentative. I guess that's the big thing.
Yeah.
He looked tentative, right? Like he didn't want to run. So I thought he was hurt. I mean, that typically Burris has always been able to run, and he's done that throughout his career. In this game, you know, when you think that you'd rely so much on the run and you don't do it, I don't know, something was off there. And I don't know if it was him or if it was the pressure, if it was the game plan, but I don't know, something wasn't right there.
I was going to add, Durant had a number of chances to run too, and he didn't take them either. And there was a three-man rush, and there's some quite large holes for him. Could have got some positive yardage, but he elected to throw, and he at one time it ended up an interception.
That's true, but Durant, towards the end of the second half, with those gaping holes, did finally decide to pull the ball down and run with it. Speaking of running, we can talk about the running backs. Wes Cates had 12 running attempts, 60 yards at one touchdown, and Joffrey Reynolds on the other side had 10 carries for 52 yards. And John Cornish, we should also mention, had 3 carries for 31. Of course, the one was the big one there where he ripped one off for 28 yards. So otherwise, the running game was held in check. And we heard all week long, and we've complained about it on this show too, but the Riders were, you know, we thought pretty susceptible to the run over at least over the last month or 6 weeks. And give them credit, they stepped up and they shut the run down and didn't give anything inside to these guys.
No, they shut them down, and Baron Simpson, who played 3.5 quarters, did what he had to do. He stopped him while he was in there, and as did Jarrell Freeman, had a few nice, some good tackles as well. But Bullock, I was really impressed with Bullock.
Yeah, Byron Bullock played well, and how about that Baron Simpson playing on a bad ankle?
Yeah.
He gutted it out, hung around, and made some plays, so that was great to see, and I hope the guy is able to go in for the Grey Cup. You expect that he will be, but
Omar Morgan, he left the game early, I understand. What was his stat? Was the knee not just...
I guess his knee had locked up, so they think he'll be good for the Grey Cup, though. So we've mentioned defense, and again, I think the defense played pretty well, limiting Burris to 229, only one touchdown. Nick Lewis was their leading receiver, 55 yards on 6 catches. Not a whole lot going on with them and their passing attack. You know, you realize in this game the importance of good tackling and wrapping up your man, where, you know, you miss a tackle. And it's really easy for somebody, an offensive player in the open field with those kinds of field conditions and that slippery turf, to really make some yardage. And one thing I was sick of hearing, and I meant to bring this up in previous podcasts, but can we just settle the yak thing once and for all? It's not yak yards. It should just be yaks, right? What do you think? Does yak yards make sense because it's yards after the catch yards? Shouldn't it just be yaks?
I never thought of it that way, but yeah, now that you say that, it is kind of redundant.
I think you're technically correct, Francis, but, you know, there are so many things that are incorrect in the way the English language is used. I think you're really being pretty picky here.
Damn it, we're taking that one back. It's yaks. From now on, it's yaks. Glenn Suter, you got it? No more yak yards.
I don't like the term anyways. So.
Why not? Don't you think it's important to get yards after the catch?
It is, but I don't like the word yak. I'd rather say yards after catch.
Does it remind you of vomiting? Is that the problem?
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. No, let's move on.
Okay. Any other thoughts on defense before we move on?
I thought McCullough had a very good game. Again, he played well last week. He played well this week.
And one thing we should mention, that Calgary allowed 3 sacks and Saskatchewan only allowed 1. And I don't know if this is, you know, we've complained about the O-line play, but you tell me, was this a case of, when we saw this lots, where Calgary dropped back into coverage and they rushed 3 guys? Or is this the O-line stepping up and playing better?
I think it was a mixture of both. Yeah. I thought the O-line played pretty solid game, but you're right. Calgary didn't send as much pressure as they normally do, which is weird because that's typically how you fluster Durant. But for whatever reason, they were happy to sit back and let him do his thing.
So it didn't turn out so well. Not that the Riders were lighting it up offensively, but they were able to come away with a win. And let's talk about the phase of the game that we love to talk about, and that's special teams. Tyler, I think I know what your answer is going to be, but what are your thoughts on special teams?
They're a liability. If you look at the field position Calgary was starting with, it was always at midfield, whether it was, you know, not great punting or kind of bad coverage, but Calgary consistently had field position on us and always putting our defense in a position where they had to dig deep to keep things close. And then our return game is just a joke.
I got one stat for you. So punt returns, Ryan Grace Mullen. Now, this has to include, I'm assuming this includes the muffed punt there in the fourth quarter. He had 6 punt returns for 2 yards. 6 punt returns for 2 yards, that's a .3-yard average. Kickoff returns, he just had the 1 kickoff return for 14 yards. So pretty abysmal return game. And you know what? I think I, like everyone else in the fourth quarter, when he dropped that punt and it went behind him and there was the mad scramble for the ball, I thought the game was over right there and that we lost. I gave up at that point. And I was shocked to see that a rider came up with it.
I've never sworn so much in my life at a TV. That was tough to watch.
Well, I was, or during the fumble. Yeah, I was, time stood still. And then Jarrell Freeman out of nowhere.
Thank God.
God.
Thank you, Jarrell Freeman.
Jarrell Freeman.
Seriously, when you get paid to catch the ball and that's really your only job, really, you could just catch the ball and fall down and you can't catch the ball? Ugh, come on. Does Ryan Grace Mullen have one more week left as a rider?
Well, I'll just see how he does next week.
Really? You think he can make all this up in 1 week and everything's okay for next year?
Well, I'm saying okay for next year, but I mean, if he has an okay game or not a bad game, who knows?
I don't know. I think after that play, it's clear that it's not going to work out. This isn't the guy.
Even Dorsey can actually hold on to them.
Well, he muffed a couple too, but
yeah.
What do you think, Keith? You had him. Ryan Grace Mullen, yay or nay?
I have to go with nay. I wasn't sorry. He was one of those ones that when he got the NFL look, I was really surprised. You know, there were a few players I was really surprised, but he was one of the ones that really stood out. And you kind of wonder if the NFL scouts weren't really careful in watching the footage because he didn't have great hands here. This is nothing new.
Well, and also last year, if you recall, against us in the 2009 season and early in the season, he dropped a winning touchdown pass. You remember that?
Which game was that? I don't remember
it was,
that.
Yeah, it was Mullen was behind everybody, and it was a last second long pass, and Mullen dropped the ball.
Yeah, but we've had a lot of players drop game winning passes this year too. So that's kind of a BC Lion trademark these days, unfortunately. So yeah, no, it's that one didn't stand out, but I do remember him, you know, just not having the greatest hands. I don't think he's actually as fast as he looks. I know I've said it before. I think the hair makes him look faster than he actually is.
It's a mirage, isn't it? The hair is like a frickin' mirage.
Yeah, I don't think he's that fast. He's probably faster than me. But
you know. So you're saying if he has a good game next week, even if he has an outstanding game, do you think he'll be back?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either, maybe.
Now you're changing your mind.
Well, I'm thinking. I forgot about that pass he dropped against us.
Well, it's more than just the pass. It's the lack of production.
I know that.
But anyway, getting back to the game, the last thing I want to talk about is the officiating. And actually, let's start with the so-called Wes Cates fumble. It was reviewed. Was that not the longest review you've ever sat through?
Yes, it was.
Like, I should have timed that sucker out. That was like a good 5-6 minutes.
And I don't know what's so complicated about it. It looked fairly straightforward compared to the ones I've seen.
I don't know whether they were just nervous and they really felt the need to make sure they got that one right. But I agree with you. I thought it was relatively obvious, and there was enough video evidence to overturn the call, but that took a long time.
Evidence also goes with the offense, too, if they can't conclusive evidence. So I thought we'd get the ball anyway.
Well, it goes based on how the ref has called it, and the ref called it a turnover, though. So there has to be enough evidence to overturn that. Otherwise, they go with what the ref has called, you know, if they can't tell. Thankfully, they got that one right. It was just a long-ass wait. Hopefully, we don't get any more of those. But moving on to discuss the rest of the game with the officials, if you went by the comments from Stampeders and by some of the fans immediately after the game, that you would have thought that the officials lost the game for the Stampeders. So we could talk about the Brandon Browner penalties on Fantuz, and we could talk about the Rombie Bryant taunting penalty. I'll just put this out there. Are those two plays specifically, or three plays, worthy calls, worthy of a penalty?
I think by the rules, yes. I mean, you don't often see that, especially the taunting one, but he made a deliberate move to go out of his path to go right in front and taunt the player. And it wasn't just John. I mean, so maybe not the strongest call, but yeah, it's a penalty. And as for Browner, I have no remorse for the guy. He makes his living clutching and grabbing, and he got caught this time. So cry me a river. Yeah. It's not okay to beast people, as he would say.
That's right.
Well, it was a real it's a real lame move after the game to say that the officiating decided the game as a player, and to you know, to suggest that you're the better player, you're better than your opponent, and the officiating interfered. Like, we've been talking about the officiating all year long and saying the officiating, you know, hasn't been great, and I don't think it has. I maintain that for the whole year. But it's really bad form to come out and say, you know, it's one thing to come out and say, hey, the officiating was crap. I think that they blew the calls. That said, I take nothing away from the other team, and, you know, good luck to them next week. That's one way to put it. The way that he was portrayed as putting it, that what did he say? Did he say something like, I can't even remember. It was something about Tom Higgins, wasn't it?
Yeah, that Tom Higgins should look at it, and it was something along the lines of Tom Higgins gave this game to the Riders.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the wording was, but I mean, that's just it's just classless, you know.
And that's Calgary. That's Calgary for you anyway. They're a bunch of they disrespect their opponents. They're a cheap shot team.
It's an approach that does seem particular to that team. I think you're right. It's unfortunate.
John Huffnagel talks about, yeah, we got to be more disciplined, but I don't care. It still comes back to coaching and how you motivate players. Kent Austin never would have gone for that, and Miller also coaches his players not to engage in that stuff.
And don't dance around in the end zone if you're a Rider. Exactly. I remember that from
Adam Nicholson.
That's the one, right, where he made the dance and he had a little talking to on the sideline there. And that's the thing, right? It's not just discipline on the field; it's discipline in the locker room. So
that's right.
It's too bad.
Yeah, and you're right, Gerard. I think that definitely comes down from the head coach. And like as Tyler said, if you look at the Bryant taunting play, he walks over to the guy and flexes his muscles. Well, you're still down by 4 points. What the hell are you celebrating? Like, these guys are so arrogant, I think, and it totally came through in their body language. Mm-hmm. These guys were just expecting to win. They assumed, based on their record, I mean, they were the best team in the regular season, I would say, but based on their record alone, that they should be given this game. And, you know, in a game that big, when you're down by 4 points, you need to move the ball and score. You're going to take time to walk over to a player and taunt him because you made a catch.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, this team is pretty arrogant. And I know Stampeder fans don't like to hear that. They think Saskatchewan is all arrogant and they run the league and get all the favorable calls and yada, 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 which we can talk about later here. But there's no doubt in my mind that at least a few of those players are very, very arrogant. And actually, you know, I wouldn't include Burris in this week.
No, Burris is pretty gracious, actually.
Yeah, he was pretty classy in his post-game comments, so I would give him credit for that. And he didn't look for excuses. He put the blame squarely on himself and his team. And, you know, at least some people realized what was going on and how they should approach things. So.
And Tom Lysak, I think Wes Lysak, he says, if I think he's quoted as saying, if we have to jump on a fumble at the end of near the end of the game, then really we're not as good as we think we are.
Well, exactly. They had lots of opportunities, not to mention being up by 11 points towards the end of the first half. So if you can't close out a game, you got no one to blame but you, and there's no way you can put this one on the refs. I don't know how many people saw the opinion piece written in the Calgary Herald, and I think that was published Saturday. Did you guys get a chance to read it?
No, I haven't.
Know what I'm talking about? Well, there was one point. I'll just read it out to you. There was one point here where the writer here is trying to get people to come out to the Stamps game to counter all the Rider fans that they expect will be in attendance. And so he says here, and I'll just read it. It is the duty of every Stamps fan in attendance to big time the Rough Riders back into their tiny, perfectly empty, potash-rich prairie hellhole of a province. What are your thoughts on that commentary?
What is potash actually used for?
It's fertilizer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a compliment then, right?
Is the hellhole of a province the complimentary part?
Well, you know.
It has been a hellhole since.
There are pluses and minuses in there. Yep. Well, I don't know.
Let's put this into a perspective, right? He's trying to get people out to a football game. And you're going to insult a group of people like that? Like, that's pretty – to me, that's a hateful comment. Now, it's not a big deal to me because this guy's a nobody. But still, it goes to the fact that people are arrogant and they obviously overreact. And they take it too far.
You know, have you ever been to a game outside of Saskatchewan with Saskatchewan fans when you're playing Saskatchewan? Like,
we've talked about that. So don't.
I'm not saying that. Rush. I'm not saying that that it's right to call an entire province a hellhole. Obviously not. You know, and you know, there's some really good things about Saskatchewan. There's some really good things about Alberta and Calgary too.
But this isn't even about Saskatchewan. This is about a stupid football game.
Well, that's it, and the guy's just trying to get butts in seats, and I understand being frustrated with Saskatchewan fans, you know, when you go to watch your team at your stadium and you got some yahoo in front of you waving a flag yelling at you because you're wearing an orange jersey at a Lions game at Empire Field. Look, I understand getting frustrated with that. Was it the best way to express it? No, absolutely not. But at the same time, you know, in terms of showing respect for other football fans, you know, there are issues on both sides of that fence.
You know, I would agree with that. But again, what percentage? Like, we're talking about the obnoxious, drunk fan that you might see at a Rider game or a game involving the Riders. And again, that's become like a stereotype, right? Like, where that tiny minority is ruining it for the rest of us. And if you're at a Rider game and yeah, you see those kinds of people, but the other 95% or 90%, whatever it is, are not like that. And so we all get smeared by that kind of thing.
It's true, but remember that, you know, it's not that there's not a reason for it too, is that that's the experience that happens mostly at Rider games. You know, when we're playing, when the Lions are playing the Riders here in Vancouver, you don't get that same kind of thing when we're playing Montreal, when we're playing Toronto, when we're playing any other team in the league, right? That said, you're absolutely right. It's individual to individual. Not this past season, but the season before, I sat next to the nicest Rider fans in the world, and I love talking football with them. I like talking football with you guys. It's cool. But the ratio of obnoxious Rider fans, and this is not, you know, based in any kind of statistic, this is just personal experience, it is higher. I'm going to leave it at that.
We're passionate. An exuberant.
Well,
I guess that's one way of putting it.
You know, you can open up a thesaurus and do whatever you want with it, Gerard, but yeah, there you go.
Do you know how many fans after the Grey Cup last year were in therapy? Thousands.
You know, but at the end of the day, it's important to be passionate about your team. I think when you're in somebody else's house, you need to show a little bit of respect. But it is good to be passionate about your team. You know, one of the things we've talked about before that's always been a little bit annoying to me is that they don't sell other teams' merchandise at the games. So, you know, if you go to an Owls game, you can't get a Calvillo jersey at the Owls game when the Owls are in town, that kind of thing. You know, and I'm not sure why that is, you know. But it's an interesting phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Is Saskatchewan a hellhole? No, I've been there. It's quite nice. Plus the potash. It's
pretty cold this week.
Tyler, you've been quiet on this one. What do you think?
I don't care too much about it. It's kind of whatever. He's trying to drum up support and takes a cheap shot. It doesn't bother me because, yeah, there's some points. There are a lot of disrespectful Rider fans, and they're certainly not in the majority. And so I can see where people, that kind of mentality of anti-Rider fans comes from, but I don't get too bent out of shape about it.
Well, you're right. It isn't a huge deal. It just goes to show, I don't know if this guy's just trying to get attention for himself
It's just reflective of the whole Calgary mentality anyway.
So that's the West final. Anyhow, we'll wrap that game up. They will move on to take on the Owls, who utterly destroyed Toronto earlier in the day. And it was funny. I think it was Damian Cox of the Toronto Star who said the Cavillo and Lemon matchup head-to-head in that game was kind of like Stephen Hawking taking on Sarah Palin and discussing theoretical physics. It was like not even close.
That's there you go.
Does Cleo Lemon come back next year?
Well, you know, that depends on your coach of the year there, Francis. What do you think Jim Barker's going to do?
Well, I think he's definitely going to bring him into camp. Whether the guy, you know, returns as the starter is another story, I guess. But I guess you'd have to. He you know, if you ask Barker, he'd say, well, he won us 10 games.
That's right.
I don't know. Anybody surprised? You can't be surprised at Montreal just beating the hell out of Toronto. Kind of an embarrassing loss, especially if you're an Argo fan. Corey Boyd didn't run for much. He got beat up, was hurt. Special teams didn't do much for Toronto. In fact, they gave up special teams touchdown. So kind of sort of the game where Toronto, you know, the rubber met the road, and they got brought back down to reality a little bit.
I think it goes to show you can't go far in the playoffs in the CFL without a passing game. I mean, I thought the Argos outdid themselves by getting this far. But if you can't pass the ball, you're not going to hang with the Montreals and the Calgarys and the Saskatchewans and the CFL. It's just that simple, really.
So to illustrate that a little bit, Cleo Lemon completed 11 passes for 169 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. On the other side of the field, Cavillo completed 19 for 334 passes, two touchdowns, and one interception. So I think you're absolutely right. It's the Canadian Football League. It's the whole game. The success of a team is based on the quarterback, and it begins with the quarterback position. If you can't throw the ball, you're in for a tough season.
This is – you're completely making my case why he's not the coach of the year, but there you go.
But he is, because Toronto does all the other stuff really well.
But you said you can't go far in the CFL without a passing
game.
Well,
yeah, so hey, he did pretty well East Final when they won 3 games last year. That's, to me, is a pretty big improvement. That's a 7-game improvement.
Yep.
So, well, so who is your choice again, Trestman?
Richie Hall.
Richie.
I absolutely stand by it. I stand by that he turned around that team over the course of the season, that he coached the Eskimos into being a successful team.
Okay, let's hear from everybody else. Coach of the year.
I don't know. Not Richie Hall. Not Richie Hall. I don't know. Trestman or Miller?
I don't think Miller, which it pains me to say it. He made a lot of mistakes this year. I think you got to go Trestman, or even I don't think Barker's that bad of a choice. I mean, you look at how well that team did without a passing game. That's pretty impressive to suck that many wins out of a running back and some special teams.
Thank you. That's my point. While we're on the subject, let's turn to the player awards, and we'll start with the quarterback. So out of the East, of course, no surprise, you have Anthony Cavillo, and out of the West, Henry Burris. Who do we like?
Cavillo, no questions asked. He was as good a quarterback statistically in every respect as Henry Burris, and missed 3 games, I think it was. And so you compare, they're about equal in most categories except for interceptions. And there's a glaring difference there. I think the pound-for-pound Cavillo is outperformed Burris all year.
Well, he did have the best quarterback rating in the league with 108.1.
Yeah, Cavillo as well. It's and not just for statistics. I think for the leadership role he plays for his team when he takes the field, you know that they're going to be successful.
Here's the problem that I had with these awards. If you look at Defensive Player of the Year, out of the West is Juwan Simpson with Calgary, and out of the East was Markeith Knowlton from Hamilton. How the hell, no disrespect to Juwan Simpson, because I think he's a good football player, but how does he take that spot over Baron Simpson, the league's leading tackler? How is that justified? Anybody else see a problem with this, or is it I'm just taking crazy pills?
I agree with it. I mean, not to take anything away from the season Simpson or Baron had, I guess, since they're both Simpsons. But Baron was a tackling machine, and that's what he does, and he does it well. But you look at what Juwan Simpson did. He racked up sacks and interceptions in tackles. He was a
all round.
Yeah, I think in terms of making a big impact. I mean, not to downplay a middle linebacker who's a tackling machine, but I think Simpson was the more dynamic, or Juwan, sorry, was the more dynamic player.
Moving on to offensive linemen, it's Marwan Hage of the Tiger Cats and Calgary's Ben Archibald. Any feelings one way or another on this one?
Nope.
Nope.
Great. This is a useful segment. I'm going to go with Marwan Hage for the hell of it, because he's a nice guy and does a lot for charity. Top Canadian, Andy Fantuz and Dave Stala. I think we all know how this is going to go.
Paul McCallum.
Incorrect. He has not been nominated in this category.
Oh, come on.
Clearly Fantuz is going to take it, right, I think, because he statistically is better. And he's got his own serial. Let's give him that. He's got to win. Special teams, Chad Owens and Jonas Davis.
I got to go with my man Jonas Davis, of course. He's exciting to watch, although he did get closed down at the end of the season. His last three games were a little bit weaker, which is unfortunate, but I still got to stick with him.
He did lead the lead in kickoff return yardage, so almost 26 yards a return.
I think Jonas Davis is the returner that scares me the most, but I think not playing the full season held him back. You look at the numbers Chad Owens put up, and I don't know how you can ignore that. He's done it all, so I think he gets the nod there.
Last one here, Rookie of the Year, Solomon Elimian and Marcus Thigpen. I'll go with Elimian. How do you say that?
I don't know.
Solomon Elimian.
S-E.
He's just a mean SOB, isn't he?
I don't know if he is a mean SOB or not. But
he looks like
effective.
One on the field.
He is effective, so I'm going with him too. I did a little bit of boosterism here. I'm going for the home team, no question.
Thigpen.
Back it up, Gerard.
I thought he had a great season. He didn't do well the last part of the on the Eastern Final. Had a terrible game, but I thought he was a very exciting player to watch. He broke a few. He had one of the longest missed field goals ever. But
he also scored every single way you can score in the CFL, right? Except for an interception or a fumble return. Every way on offense you can score.
Very dynamic player, and he's exciting to watch.
I'm not on the Thigpen train. I'm not taking anything away from him, but he did all his work in the first 3-4 weeks and then became one of the most overhyped players in the CFL. He just so hot and cold, and I like the consistency that Elimian put up a lot more.
I got to agree with you that one of the things that happens over the course of the season, and we've talked about this before too, is that you get certain stories that are picked up in the media or whatever when people talk about games, and they just go on and on and on all season, and the season can change and evolve, and a team can change, and a player's performance can change. But whatever that story was that was built at the beginning of the season seems to carry through and through, and that's, I agree with you with Thigpen, that was the experience. I feel that was the experience with the Eskimos too, that they were, going back to the coaching thing, and why I think Richie Hall did such a good job is anytime the Eskimos seemed to win a game, everybody said, wow, a crappy team just won a game. You know, they wouldn't give an inch, and it's a pretty easy way to look at the game is to set up your story and to sort of stick with it. So there you go.
Well, we will see this week who comes out with the awards. Picks of the week.
When Gerard picks a long shot to win, Francis's reaction might seem unkind. But when Gerard makes his picks of the week, you know Gerard. He blows my mind, my mind.
Pick of the week.
Well, whatever, pick of the week. How did Gerard do last week?
I have to check my notes. I'd forgotten we were going to do this segment.
Oh, Jiminy Cricket.
I know, I'm a little embarrassed. Gerard picked Montreal and Saskatchewan. Holy smokes. Gerard, 100%.
All right. What's
so
the
now
setup
for
the, what am I in the year ahead. Now? What am I in the year?
Regular season's over. Playoffs don't count. Sorry.
Uh-oh.
I know. If only. So,
Let's be careful about this one. Let's try not and just go with the normal Homer type of answer here and really think about this one. Gerard, put all of your mental abilities into coming up with a winner.
Saskatchewan versus Montreal in Edmonton.
Why?
Saskatchewan will win because they have as much momentum going into it as Montreal, and they go to avenge it, and they will.
You know what I think is going to happen?
They'll shut Calgary down.
Yeah. It's Gerard's segment, but I'm going to jump in anyway. I think that Montreal is going to come out to an early big lead, and Saskatchewan will chip away at it as the game goes on, and it will end in a very close result, and I don't know what the result will be. Mm.
You could be right. I mean, we seem to play better when we're down a bit, or a lot even sometimes.
Well, it's certainly been the game story for the last few weeks, eh?
It's like we have to get down, and then we realize, oh yeah, we're playing a football game. Maybe we should try now.
Well, everyone's got a case of nerves.
It's almost like it's almost like every time Saskatchewan gets on the field, they sort of have to figure it out. You know, like they have to look at it and say, oh, okay, this is what's going on. This is what we're going to do. And then they do, and they turn it around and they bring it home. You know, like that's a good football team that can look at it, analyze it, and then make the adjustments they need to.
Well, the good news weather-wise, it should be a relatively balmy -6 on Sunday in Edmonton. So hopefully the weather is less of a factor.
Hey, you didn't ask Tyler his prediction.
Do you even have to ask?
I didn't think so.
There you go.
No, I think if Saskatchewan can play defense like they did this past week, Montreal's defense has been pretty shaky this year.
They're not the team they were last year, I don't think.
I don't think so. I think you're right, though, about the lead, because Saskatchewan doesn't seem to like to play until they're down 10 points.
Well, they hate the first quarter.
Yeah.
They need motivation. Why should we score?
Durant's got to call his dad, too.
That's right.
What?
There's going to be a red phone set up.
Yeah. No.
He always calls his dad like when things aren't like before the game starts, but against BC, the semifinal, he didn't call his dad till halftime or something, and he had a lousy first half, so he's got to phone his dad to calm him down.
Okie dokie.
You never heard that, eh?
No. Yeah. I don't know what will happen in this game. I think both teams have momentum. You know, it just comes down to who wants it more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tyler, you mentioned the defense, and they played their best game. And I don't know whether it was them or whether it was the weather or whether it was Calgary or some kind of combination. But it'll come down to whoever wants this more. And they can beat Montreal, and Montreal can beat Saskatchewan. And I really don't know. And you'd think that Saskatchewan would have an advantage when it comes to the weather. But I could see this one going either way. I hope it's Saskatchewan. They need to make up for last year, and that's the other thing. Do they have the desire? Do they really want this one and make up for what happened last year? So
they have to be sharp. They have to be very sharp and very tight.
Yeah. One last question: Does anybody care that it's the same two teams 2 years in a row?
Not when you're in there.
That used to be. There were a couple of years where that was Edmonton and Montreal, right?
Right.
Yeah, there was the 70s.
I mean, it's Montreal pretty much every year, right? Which is just fine with me. I love to watch the Alouettes play football. Yeah, if BC couldn't be there and Edmonton couldn't be there, then Saskatchewan's a good choice.
It was pretty dull in those five straight, when Edmonton won five straight Grey Cups, that was pretty dull, but no, it's fine.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about this time, that it's just going to be dull and people aren't going to be tuned in, and it's just, you know, it's good to mix it up, though. However, yeah, I won't complain if we win the Grey Cup.
Well, that's the thing. That's the way to mix it up, right, is change the result from last year.
That's right.
Well, Tyler, we want to thank you for being on, coming on with us to discuss the games of the divisional finals.
My pleasure.
And that's going to do it for us. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also leave us a review, which makes us more visible. You can follow us on the Twitter, the Facebook, and you can email us. We didn't read any emails this week, actually, in our The Moment You Knew We're a Rider Fan contest. So keep sending those in. And next week, we're going to have to pick winners for that. So send us your stories, podcast@greenisthecolor.ca, as well as any other questions or comments you have. And I guess we'll just look forward to Grey Cup week. We'll just try to enjoy it, soak it all in, and hope for the best. So Sunday's the big game, 5 or 6 o'clock?
5:30.
Is it Saskatchewan time?
Saskatchewan time, 5:30.
So go Riders.
Go Riders.
Go Riders.
Roar, ye green Riders. Roar. Wait, is that our saying? No.
That's our theme.
Did I mix that one up?
Thanks, Francis.
All right. Have a good week, and we will talk to everyone again next week.